Tantor Audio, a division of Recorded Books, presents Romantically Perfect by S.E. Rose. Narrated by Monica King and Tim Page. Chapter 1. Die. Music blares from my headphones as I jog down Main Street. Louis Armstrong is belting out about friends shaking hands, and it's like he wrote It's a Wonderful World just for Banneker, Maryland. Right on cue, Mr. Benson and Mr. Folly, who always play checkers outside of the coffee shop, lean over the table and shake hands before packing up their pieces to head home for the day. The sky is blue with giant puffy clouds floating by on a light breeze. Summer is quickly warping into fall, which means I have 3 more days until school starts. Then, my midday run will have to turn into either the crack of dawn run or the before dinner run. I groan internally at the thought, which begins to morph into a giant rain cloud over the spectacular day. My phone buzzes, and I look down to see a text in my family chat. Lainey. Need help setting up your classroom? Kent.
Why is this in the group chat?
Kylie. Don't be an asshole. Mothership. Kylie, language, and Kent, you are being a party pooper. Dad.
I can help if you need it.
Sea Dog.
Yeah, I sort of have a party all weekend.
Kent.
See, we have pressing life matters to attend to. I'm sure Di has this.
Lainey. You guys suck. Seriously, text me if you need help. I laugh and text back that I'm good before continuing my run.
Miss Moore! Miss Moore!
The shrieking of Ellie Thomas and Ruby Hines draws me out of my funk. I slow down and smile at them. These two cuties are going to be in my class this year. I've been lucky in that I have moved from teaching second to third and now fourth grade at my elementary school. Fourth grade is the grade I had originally wanted to teach when I started a few years ago, but there weren't any openings, so I taught second or third for a few years. And then Miss Garrison retired, and voila! I am now the new fourth grade teacher. It also means that I have had some of the same kids in my class now for going on 3 years. It's unusual that I get to know kids so well, but I love it. I'll be sad to see them go to a new teacher next year. Hey, girls, I reply as I slow down in front of the ice cream shop. You ready for school? Ellie nods enthusiastically, but Ruby shrugs and looks down at her feet. Yes. They both say, their voices mirroring their bodies' reactions to the question. I nudge Ruby's foot with mine, and she looks up at me. We are going to have so much fun this year, and guess where we get to go on a field trip? Ruby's eyes widen a bit.
Where?
Annapolis in the National Aquarium? I say excitedly. Ruby's lips slowly form a smile.
Really? The National Aquarium?
I nod. Poor Ruby has allergy issues and she ate a cracker with peanut butter on it at an after-school activity and ended up in the hospital. That happened to coincide with our field trip to the local nature center. I haven't felt that bad about a kid missing a field trip in a long time. Yep, it's going to be awesome. I'll see you ladies in a few days. They wave goodbye as I take off running back home, which is only a block away. I currently reside in an apartment above Martin's Gifts on Elm Street, just a block off Main Street and 2 blocks from my school, Charles Elementary School. I slow down as I turn onto my street. As I'm stretching, my phone buzzes with a text. Mothership. You ready for school to start? Are you sure you don't need me to help you? I roll my eyes. My mother was a school nurse, and I swear she lives vicariously through me now. Me. Yes, Mother, and thank you, but I really am good. Can't talk now. Mothership. Oh, dear, did I catch you running? I'm sorry. Call me later. Me. Okay. I'm about to punch my security numbers into the door that takes me up to the apartment when my phone buzzes again. I look down to see the sibling chat blowing up with messages. Kent.
Alert, alert, this just in. Party at my place on Saturday after the rents.
Tabby. Correction, party at our place. Kent.
Same thing.
Tabby, angry emoji. Lainey, kids or no kids? Kylie, pool or no pool? Sea dog, seriously, are these even questions?
Kent, park Ash at mom and dad's and of course we'll be in the pool. Who are you and what have you done with our sister?
Me, I'm in. Lainey, great, you can explain to your nephew why he can't come.
Sea dog, poor Ash man, I'll tuck him in and then he won't be so bummed.
Kylie, right, he'll just have nightmares instead.
Sea dog,
middle finger emoji. Lainey,
grow up people.
Me, so much love.
Lainey, die, don't stir the pot.
Sea dog,
what? Who's bringing pot?
Me, Clark, first of all, no, just no.
Sea dog, you are so boring.
Me, I am so a teacher.
Lainey, is this convo over? I have things to do.
Kylie, so sorry, Your Supreme Highness. I believe our audience with Mother Hen has ended.
Lainey, eye-rolling emoji.
Whatever. I put my phone in my pocket and start to open the door when I hear my name from across the street.
Di.
I turn slowly to see Garrett Henley, all 6'2" of his perfect body. Garrett teaches 5th grade at my school. He is also fucking hot as hell. He lives a few blocks away on Walnut Drive in an old house that he has slowly been restoring over the past 5 years. And I may have had the world's biggest crush on him for the past 5 years. But our very first conversation makes Garrett a non-starter for me in the relationship department. Why, you ask? Because he doesn't believe in true love. He says love is just a temporary thing. He actually said that when one of the other teachers began raving about seeing a production of Romeo and Juliet over the summer. I couldn't believe my ears. I went from hearing angels singing when he entered the staff room on his first day, all muscled and perfect in his tight-fitting t-shirt that had an old Poltergeist movie photo on it, to permanently friend-zoning him. Truthfully, I had actually glimpsed him the day before that and thought he was cute then. Now I just ogle him from afar. The funny thing about his first day was that he was literally wearing a t-shirt with a photo of a girl whose middle name I have because of the movie. Diana after Wonder Woman, thanks Dad, and Carol after Carol Ann from Poltergeist because Mom has a thing with horror movies. I wanted him to so badly be my soulmate, my one true love, the one that would sweep me off my feet, finally. And then he had to say that. My dreams came crashing down, and I moved on to dating Brad Farley, who left me for a waitress at his favorite restaurant, which isn't even that good, by the way. Of course, Brad was just one in a long line of failed attempts at love. I don't get it. All my siblings just run into random people and bam, they find love. Meanwhile, I want to find true love more than all of them combined, and nope, nothing. It's seriously crickets over here. At least Garrett turned out to be a nice guy. We're friends now. I mean, friendly. We usually both attend the teacher happy hours at the pub, and he's helped me out a few times with the use of his truck for moving things. Oh, hey, what's up? I say as I lean against my door jamb. He looks both ways and crosses the street. He clearly just got back from Floyd's gym. His tight shirt clings to his sweaty body and fully accentuates his six-pack. Or does he have 8? I try to stop from looking, but that deep V above his waistband has all of my attention.
You coming to the first day happy hour this week?
He asks as my eyes slowly move up his body to meet his eyes. His eyes. Have I mentioned those yet? 'Cause they are perfect. They are blue, like mine, but darker with flecks of green and brown in them. Yeah, I'll be there, I answer.
Cool.
We both pause for a moment in awkward silence.
What?
We both start talking at once. I grin and blush as I stop, and he grins back at me.
You first, he insists.
How was your summer? I ask, I hadn't seen Garrett in a few weeks. He shrugs.
Honestly?
He starts, running a hand through his thick brown hair that makes my hand twitch in longing.
Sort of shitty. I broke up with April a few weeks ago. My friend, oh, you met him once, Greg. He talked me into going to the shore for the last 2 weeks, which was needed. How about you?
My brain is still processing that he is single. Ugh. His breakup probably only worked to confirm his feelings about true love. Oh, nothing really. Just hanging out with the family. My brother got married 2 weeks ago, so that was fun.
Right. I forgot Kent's wedding was this month. How'd it go?
I launch into a short version of the wedding of the century for Banneker. They got married down at the Historical Society, which is housed in this ancient mansion on the river near the courthouse. It has some pretty gardens in the back and faces the park on the river with a gazebo. Of course, Kent rented the park and the house and had a giant party for all our family and friends. An intimate ceremony, they said. Kent's idea of intimacy was 200 of our closest family and friends, but whatever.
Sounds nice,
he says when I finish.
I gotta get going. I have soccer practice in an hour.
Did I mention that Garrett also coaches the high school boys' soccer team? Well, he does. And the mornings when they all come running down the street with no shirts because it gets hot, I may drool over Garrett from behind my curtains. I guess I'll see you at school, I reply as I turn and head inside to my apartment. Now, as apartments go, mine is pretty sweet. It's a two-bedroom, one-bathroom that takes up the two floors above the gift shop. It has a balcony off the main living area overlooking a small courtyard in the back. Yeah, so it maybe reminded me of Romeo and Juliet. So kill me. I lean against my door for a moment and sigh. Why, oh, why does he have to be so freaking hot?
Garrett. Why, oh, why does Di have to be so beautiful? No, nope, not going there. I don't need another relationship. I probably need a year's worth of therapy to unravel why I hate love and never want a serious relationship again. But if I had to break it down to a Cliff's Notes version, I'd say my parents' nasty divorce, followed by my first serious girlfriend cheating on me, are the likely culprits of my disdain for all things romance-related. On my first day on the job, I saw Di, and I was totally interested. I thought, hey, maybe a friends with benefits situation. Then she opened her mouth about all that mushy love stuff, and I had to immediately shut her down. She got friend-zoned. But I'd be lying if I didn't admit that I use every excuse possible to be around her. She's an awesome person, completely not like me in every way, but yet I find her oddly endearing. Her family seems super cool, too, like a bunch of people that I'd love to hang out with. Only, Di's been in serious relationships pretty much the entire time I've known her, until recently. Now I'm curious if that whole friends with benefits thing could actually happen. Maybe Di's changed her mind about all that hearts and flowers bullshit. I grab a shower while I contemplate this. By the time I finish, I'm no closer to figuring Di out than I was when I started. I pull on some shorts and a t-shirt and head out to the high school to coach my kids. Okay, not my kids, but yeah, my kids. I arrive to find my two seniors, Aiden and Marcus, setting things up as per their co-captain positions require. It's strange how much I love this town. When I first came here, I never thought it'd be for me. I took the position thinking I'd stay for a year and then find a position in a bigger city. Yet over 5 years later, here I am.
Chapter 2. Die.
Cannonball!
Clark yells as he runs and jumps into the pool, pulling up his legs so he can make the largest splash possible. My youngest brother just started back at college for his sophomore year. Clark, or Sea Dog, was the surprise baby in our family. Poor kid had 6 built-in parents growing up. But I have to say, he hasn't turned out half bad. Of course, Clark is quickly followed by my brother-in-law, Bricks, who's married to my twin sister, Lainey, my brother, Kent, and Kent's best friend, Amory. His splash goes even further. I set down a bottle of wine in the bar and walk over to my sister-in-law, Tabby, who is sitting in an oversized lounge chair. She pats it as I approach, and I take the seat next to her. "You ready for school?" she asks me. We had enough time to catch up on my parents tonight, so it's nice to sit here and chat with her. I love Tabby. She's artsy and fun and a total yin to my brother's yang. "Yeah, just about. I have a few things to bring to the classroom tomorrow, and then I just need the kiddos." "How stoked is Ashton that you get to teach him again?" she asks, referring to our nephew. I grin. I think he secretly loves it, but of course he tells all his friends that it's such a drag being in his aunt's class. Again. I put the air quotes to emphasize the last word. She giggles. "Whatever, that kid loves you." "I know. I can't help that I'm way cooler than his mom." "Who are you cooler than?" Kylie asks as she sits down next to me. "Lainey." Kylie laughs. "Duh, but that's not saying a lot." "What's not saying a lot?" Lainey asks as she walks up to us. We all burst out laughing. "What?" she inquires with a raised eyebrow. "We were just chatting about how Ash will be super ready for a new teacher after this year." "No, he won't. He loves having you as a teacher," my sister insists. I raise my eyebrow. She laughs and holds up a hand. Okay, but you are the cooler twin." Everyone laughs again. "See? Even Lainey knows I'm cooler." She rolls her eyes. "I knew you were talking about me." I give her the twin look and she shakes her head.
"Why are all the women congregating in one corner?" Clark yells from the pool as he attempts to splash us.
I turn to him. "Clark, this is the cool kids' corner, not the women's corner." Brix comes up behind Lainey, hugging her and covering her in water. She groans.
"Now it's the cool kids' corner," Brick says with a wink as he walks back over to the pool and jumps in before Lainey can swat him.
She tosses off her shirt and shorts and eyes the hot tub. "I'm going to the quiet section if anyone wants to join me." I follow her. We haven't had a ton of twin time this summer. I pull off my sundress and sink into the bubbling hot water. "Have I mentioned how much I love our brother?" I murmur with my eyes closed.
"You mean how much you love his house?"
Lainey corrects. "Touché." I lean my head back against a pool pillow and let the powerful jets do their job.
"So, who's the latest victim?"
Lainey asks. I'd roll my eyes, but they are already closed. "I think I'm going to take a break from dating."
"What?"
Lainey says way too loudly and the whole party quiets down.
"What's wrong?"
Kent yells from the pool.
"There's something very wrong with Di. She just said she's taking a dating break. I think we need a family intervention right now."
Before I can even open my eyes, the oversized hot tub is filled with splashing, and I groan and sink lower into the water. Only my leg touches another leg, and I jump back, opening my eyes to find the entire party has moved here.
"What?"
I ask them, looking around at all the faces of my siblings and their significant others.
"You can't be serious,"
Kent states.
"You are our crew love guru. Should we sign you up for like a dating app or something?"
"Yeah, here, hand me your phone and I'll find you a good one,"
Sea Dog volunteers. "First off, I don't have my phone on me because we are in the water. Second, I'm allowed to not date. It's not like I always have a boyfriend." Everyone stares at me deadpan. "Okay, but I don't rush out for the next one once a relationship ends." The blinking eyes staring back at me make me groan again. "Di, we depend on you to be, well, you," Kylie explains.
"Yeah, like our constant Juliet,"
Sea Dog points out while making an air heart with his fingers. "We could all set you up on dates," Kylie says excitedly.
"No way,"
I retort. "I've had several blind dates, and they have all been epic disasters."
"Spoil sport," she mutters.
"We could send in an application for a reality TV series,"
Brix says with a wink. I sigh. "Can't I just not date?" Lainey clears her throat. "Just promise us you aren't giving up on love, and we'll back off."
"Fine,"
I say way too loudly and throw my hands up in the air. I'm not giving up on love. Happy? They all look at each other and back at me, nodding and murmuring okay. I love you all, but you drive me crazy, I mutter as I pull myself out of the hot tub.
Hey, don't leave,
Kent pleads as I pick up my sundress. I'm not going to stay here and get the 10th degree over the fact that I don't currently have a boyfriend, I huff.
Daipai, don't be pissed. We love you, Clark says in his best little boy voice because he knows I'm a sucker for him, even though he's one giant ass baby now.
I'm not pissed. I'm just annoyed. I pull the sundress over my head. I sigh. I promise only to be annoyed tonight.
Fair enough, Kent says. You good to drive home?
I nod. Normally, I'd stay later, but tonight, I'm just not feeling it.
Garrett. Something about late-night running is just soothing. It's quiet and dark out, and I love running down Main Street with all its little lights. It's my time alone. I finished installing the mirror in the guest bathroom and needed to get out of my house. My parents swore my house would be a giant money pit, and they were correct. But I still love it. I love restoring it and making it mine. Last weekend, Dad came over to help and told me I was turning into a young Bob Vila, which made me feel good about my carpenter skills. I turn onto Elm Street. I always turn onto Elm Street. Sure, I could run down Maple or Oak, but I'm a glutton for punishment. I'm about to cross the street when a car door flies open and nearly knocks me to the ground. I jump back and grab a nearby street lamp to keep from falling. Oh my God, I'm sorry, Garrett. I didn't see you there, Di's voice says. A second later, she pops out of the car and walks over to me, looking me up and down. Did I hurt you? I release the lamp and stand straight. No, I'm fine. I can't help but wonder if she's coming back from a date. It is Saturday night, after all. Hot date? I ask, the words coming out of my mouth before I can stop them. She raises an eyebrow. No. I see something flash across her eyes as she speaks. Everything okay? She sighs and leans against her car. It's fine, I've just decided to take a vacation from dating. Now it's my eyebrow that rises. You? She groans. Yes, why is this such a difficult concept for everyone to grasp? I cross my arms and notice that she inspects my biceps. Because you've been talking about finding Mr. Wright since the first day we met. You know what? Maybe that's my problem. I always talk about all this love bullshit. Fuck it. Fuck love. I'm done with it for now. It's not like being obsessed with it has gotten me anywhere. She throws her arms in the air and walks toward her apartment. It takes a moment to process what she said, and when I do, I'm genuinely concerned. I'm also genuinely interested because maybe this means we can be friends with benefits someday. Wait, Di, what happened? What's wrong? She turns to me with her hand on the doorknob. Love, that's what's wrong. Good night, Garrett. Enjoy your run. She shuts her door, leaving me standing there and wondering what the actual fuck just happened.
Chapter 3. Di. I walk into my parents' kitchen, tossing my purse on their island.
Hey,
Dad says as he turns from the counter where he's putting dishes in the dishwasher.
Rough day?
I groan and put my forehead on the counter. A moment later, I hear a glass move across the cool quartz surface, and I look up to see a glass of chocolate milk. I grin. Since I was a little girl, whenever I had a bad moment, Dad was always there with chocolate milk. I don't know why, but it just became our thing. Dad doesn't speak. Hell, Dad was seldom a big speaker. He's more like a gentle giant, always there, catching us when we fell, picking us back up and brushing us off before sending us on our way. I know he's waiting for me to speak. He pats my hand and then goes back to loading the dishes in the dishwasher.
What's bothering you, Di?
I pull up a stool and sit, taking a long sip of my chocolate milk. Somehow, it always tastes better when Dad pours it. I... Have you ever misjudged someone or something? I ask him.
Sure. I've had friends and colleagues that I thought couldn't do something and then, bam, they do it. I mean that in a good way. I guess I more underestimated them. There was a kid in high school that was new one year, and I thought he was a real badass. He just had that air about him. He presented himself as this total rebel. But then my debate partner got the flu, and I was complaining in class to this kid about having to drop out of this big national tournament. The kid, Gerald, said he could do it. I was shocked, but I thought, well, it's better than not going. So I agreed. It turns out he was this great debater and had decided to put up a rebel facade when he started at our school because he was bullied at his last school. So, yes, I have misjudged someone before.
Dad stares at me, waiting for an explanation, but I don't give one. I'm saved by the bell when Mom walks into the room. Thank God, because I don't want to have to explain to Dad that I've misjudged the idea of love. Hey, I need to go get some things for Clark's birthday party. You want to come? She asks me. I shrug. I probably should get home and prep my lesson plans for next week, but the idea of being distracted seems too much more appealing. And only Mom would buy party items weeks in advance. Yeah, sure. Why not? I mutter. I'll meet you in the garage then, she says as she grabs her purse, kisses Dad, and heads out to the car. I turn to Dad, who's leaning against the counter.
I have a feeling there's more to this conversation, he guesses.
I shrug and draw a circle with my finger on the countertop. I've misjudged so many people. Boys. Men, that I wonder if I'm just a bad judge of character. It's not exactly what I've misjudged, but it is part of the equation. Dad steps over to me and puts his hands on my shoulders. I look up into his kind eyes.
Listen here, Diana Carroll. You are not a bad judge of character. You, of all my children, are the best judge of character, because you have always believed that there is good in everyone. You seek out that good. It's what draws people to you. Don't give up on us guys. We're a little dense sometimes when it comes to love, but I promise we do come around eventually.
I look down and bite my lip to keep myself from crying. Thanks, Dad. He pulls me into a bear hug and kisses the top of my head.
I love you. Kiddo, don't give up on love. Romance is a part of who you are. It feeds your soul. But love is hard. You'll find it. And when you do, I know it will be the real thing because you have studied love more than anyone in this family.
I squeeze Dad's middle and nod, knowing that if I speak, my voice will crack and give away the emotions that I'm feeling right now. I turn, and only once I'm by the garage door, I yell, Thanks, Dad!
Anytime, Die Pie.
I hurry to the car, wanting to put distance between me and the real words that Dad just spoke. I'm not ready to process them quite yet.
Garrett. I have no idea how I ended up at the party store. One second I'm minding my own business, and the next the teachers rope me into planning Principal Kennedy's birthday party. She turns 50 this year. I don't know what to do with that. I mean, does she even want a party? Karis Kennedy hates dark colors, and all these damned decorations are black and say over the hill, and other stuff that makes me feel like we're just throwing a you're halfway to dead party. I groan and look around the store at a total loss of what to do. Garrett, my dear, you look like you are lost. I turn to find Mrs. Moore standing in the aisle, staring at me with concern. Hi, Mrs. Moore, Well, I'm trying to plan Principal Kennedy's birthday party, and... I wave my hand over the decorations. Mrs. Moore surveys them, and a small smile forms on her lips. Karis would hate a party with such, morbidly funny decor. "Might I suggest this aisle?" she says as she motions for me to follow her. I do, but when I turn...
Sample complete. Ready to continue?